He's our voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcome back, Dr. Brown. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I was watching the news, and whenever I hear certain terms or words in the medical field, I think, ooh, I think I talked about that with Dr. Brown. You and I have talked about the bird flu so many times, I have lost track of how many times.
That's true.
But
absolutely.
I was listening to this yesterday on the news. The FDA says samples of milk taken from grocery stores across the country have tested positive for remnants of the bird flu virus, apparently infecting dairy cows. This is interesting because, you know, we talk about our feathered friends, but we don't really talk so much about cattle being impacted by bird flu. So I wanted to dive into that a little bit with you, if you don't mind, and also talk about, you know, milk, because of course everyone's worried about it.
So it is interesting, and we do know that cows and cattle can get the bird flu. In fact, they're actually a concern about, I think we talked about that the other day, that it is actually in chickens, but we do know that it can be carried by cows. It turns out that the virus does concentrate in the milk. The cow gets sick, and this may explain why certain cats actually end up, you know, that are from a farm will actually die from this flu.
Oh.
So that's actually, it is definitely something that there's some connection here. I think to talk about sort of what we're seeing. So I think the testing is really important. So testing, you know, nowadays is very, very sensitive. So we can test for anything. We can test for a really small amount. So when they say viral particles, really what they're talking about is, or you can assume what they're talking about is the genome. So it's looking at the DNA or RNA of this particle.
Okay.
And that's what we can detect.
Got it.
So we did that in COVID, right? In COVID, we had these PCR tests. The PCR test would be able to detect the virus or the virus particle, but it didn't mean that we necessarily were sick from it. It just could detect it. So we found it. Sometimes it was 90 days after an infection. So that's the same sort of thing that we're seeing with the milk. So it's not seeing full-on viruses. It's actually seeing viral particles. The process in which we treat milk, pasteurization, which is heating and cooling milk, will actually eliminate, it doesn't sterilize it, but it's pretty good at eliminating.
Is it like boiling water? How you could put stuff into boiling water and it'll eliminate? No,
it's similar to that.
It's
a process of repetitive high pressure.
Okay.
And, you know, in heat.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it doesn't spoil it, but it ends up, but what it'll do is it'll actually eliminate the majority of the bacteria and the viruses.
So anything that's pasteurized? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So pasteurized milk is safer. Raw milk might be better, but pasteurized milk is safer.
Is that the same with any dairy products then? Pasteurized cheese, yogurt, all that?
Correct. That's exactly right.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, if we're detecting it in milk, should we assume that we're, I hate that word, but should we imagine then that we could be detecting it in any dairy product?
You could assume that, yes.
Well, I don't know. You know, I can't really break down why we don't assume, right?
But that's exactly right.
Can I deduce
that? That's why I said assume. You can.
Can I make the educated assumption or guess?
Is it possible that you will see particles particles of virons in dairy products? It's possible.
Okay.
Without actually doing it, it's tough to say. The question comes is, what does that mean?
Right.
Well, and the answer is that it probably right now doesn't mean much.
Okay.
Humans don't usually get one, it's really tough to get avian flu. Two is that it's a respiratory virus.
Mm-hmm.
So humans have to either have to breathe it in, so it needs to be aerosolized, or have to get it to their nose, really to their nose. I mean, somewhat the mouth. So the likelihood of transmission by drinking it is, I don't know, you'd have to have a lot of particles that would be there.
Okay, so that was going to be my follow-up, which I'm so glad that we share one brain. So essentially, if you kept drinking the raw milk that you usually do, you don't go pasteurized, essentially nothing should happen. You should be okay, or like, will you get a stomach ache? Will you not, like, what happens to
you? You should essentially have nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
Nothing. Oh. I mean, it is, obviously, so there's several pieces that are there. So if you see viral particles, again, that's basically dead virus is what we're talking about. Okay. Yeah. If you have live virus, yeah, I know, right? But it's sterilized. Sterilized live, sterilized dead virus.
Okay,
fair. But if you have, if you have a, milk that's teeming with virus, yeah, I mean, there's a possibility that you can get sick from it. But, usually at that stage where a cow is that sick, usually those cows are put down.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
I mean, usually those cows are put down. I wouldn't say usually.
Right. Okay. That's fair. Well, no, I appreciate it because, again, you keep hearing about bird flu, and I think that we've definitely talked about it a lot in the last month.
Absolutely.
Because we've had, just in recent years, we've detected bird flu at some of our farms here in Connecticut. So it's definitely something that is not out of the realm of possibilities. But then when you hear about it, being in our milk supply, it's like, oh, good grief. You know the frenzy.
I do. And the CDC and the FDA are saying, listen, 99% of it is just absolutely fine. And majority of it is sterile. But as I said, you're basically finding the genomic sequence of the virus particles, but it's basically sterile. So it's just a protein.
Fair. Okay. We have Dr. Brown here, and I want to address a big event that's coming up this weekend, which is National Drug Take Back Day. And there are several drop-off locations in Connecticut, obviously way more across the country, but this day comes up pretty frequently, obviously, on an annual basis. And we had an interesting question, Dr. Brown, from a listener, because it was in my news, and it actually was a really good one. I didn't know how to answer it. And I'm not a doctor, so I thought, you're perfect for this. So, obviously, we hear about, you don't want those drugs to end up in our kids' hands or in our pets' hands. I get that. I understand that. That is as clear as day. But on a broader subject, what does happen when we have expired medication, even over-the-counter medication? People will still, use it, and then they realize a couple days later, why isn't anything happening? Oh, because it's 3 years expired. What happens when we have expired medication in our systems? Like, does it do anything significantly awful? Obviously, I'm talking over-the-counter, but prescription is going to be a little bit different. But can you talk a little bit about this?
Sure, absolutely. So the first thing is the, expiration of medications. So the concern is that the longer a medication sits at, room temperature or anywhere, the concern is that the actual effect that it does can diminish. And that is why there's an expiration date on medications. So basically what we're saying is that the medication has been tested in a certain way. And by testing that medication, we know that it's effective, and we know it's effective at its current dose, what it's supposed to do for this period of time. If it's past that period of time, we can no longer say, is it going to be effective? It might be effective, but there's no studies that say that it actually will. Therefore, there's an expiration date on it to say, okay, at this date, it needs to be basically taken back and gotten rid of. So again, the question is that will it work? It might. The bottom line is that we just can't be assured that it is. And I think that is the piece. And then some of the more complex medications, the newer medications, they have a shelf life because they do degrade a little bit faster because they have different components that can actually, again, degrade and actually not be effective.
Okay. I mean, I think but you're saying it's more like be safe than sorry. So essentially, we have a good understanding of, okay, the efficacy is probably going to drop off in the next 2 years from this medication. So if it's not as effective, you might as well get rid of them. But if you've got drugs in your cabinet that are 5 years old, 10 years old, expired, I mean, can that really have any efficacy at that point? I mean, I think that's...
Answer is that. But is it the dose that's actually there and the dose that actually will work?
Right.
And the concern is, and I think this was your other question, was that, why are we taking them back? Not everything is a narcotic, right? Or an opioid. So the concern is that if you look at the statistics throughout the country, the highest amount of accidental ingestion is actually from household substances by children.
No.
In particular, it's actually expired medications.
No way.
Yeah,
really?
So the most common, most severe is, yeah, household substances in particular, medications. And then the other concerns is that, you know, medications that are, so there's a even more concerning is that introduction of children to medications like an opioid is actually from a friend or a household. So it's actually going into the cabinets and taking an opioid. That's usually their first experience.
Wow.
So that's why it's really important. And again, you can do different things with them. There's a flush list that the FDA has.
Mm-hmm.
But the recommendation is, and you know, after all of our conversations we've had here, that I'm not a big fan of flushing anything.
Right.
Because we know that, like antibiotics, right? We know that if you flush it, it doesn't completely, you know, what's going to happen to it? Well, it's actually going to seep into the ground. And
or yeah, can
eliminate.
We not do that? Good Lord.
Yeah, don't flush stuff.
Oh,
it's so much better to eliminate it that way. There's also a kitty litter technique that can be used too. But honestly, the easiest way is to you know, drop it off at an appropriate spot.
Interesting. Well, I appreciate that, Dr. Brown. I thank you for that clarity because, as I mentioned, logically it makes sense, and I always lean on the fact that you don't want it to end up in the wrong hands. But when the follow-up is, okay, but what if there are no wrong hands for it to end up in? Why do I have to go drop it off somewhere? That's really, really interesting. So
yeah, and there's always, you know, with meds, there's always a wrong hands. I mean, again, if you do decide to dispose of the things, or you have to do it a different way, or you decide to use the flush list, make sure that you scrape out, you know, before you throw your pill bottle away, that you make sure that you also scrape that out, peel off the peel. Because that's actually a great way for people to steal some of your information and actually even refill it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's very true. Thank you for adding that, because that's very true. Dr. Brown, I appreciate you every week on the show. Thank you so much. And who knows what we'll talk about next week, but I will see you here, friend.
My pleasure, Melissa.
All right. Dr. Brown of Griffin Health here on WICC.